This episode is brought to you by Builder Prime. Here's a number that should bother you. The average home improvement contractor loses six figures a year to leads that don't get called fast enough and never get consistent follow-up. Not bad leads, leads you already paid for. Builder Prime exists because Jonathan Weinberg saw that while working at a window and door company, watching good leads die in spreadsheets while the team juggled four different tools that didn't talk to each other. So he built the fix. Builder Prime is the operating system for growth-minded home improvement contractors. CRM, estimating, production, payments, reporting, and marketing automation with built-in SMS. One login, one source of truth. Companies that switch see an average 63% increase in sales in the first year. And coming soon, AI-powered business intelligence that lets you literally talk to your data across the entire customer journey. Ask a question, get the answer. No report building, no exports. When everything is in one place, the possibilities are endless. Visit builderprime.com to learn more.
You can't really control your destiny when you have other people that have more power over you. And that SEO, even though it's good, and even though it can be powerful, you got to put a lot of money in there to get those results that you want. Quite frankly, I don't have control of my business when I do those type of marketing. But canvassing face-to-face marketing, for me and us around here, the way I came into the business, has been phenomenal.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and with me today is my friend Grant Winstead. Grant, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being here and seeing you.
Yeah, good to see you too. So Grant is out of Washington, D.C., and his company is called Renovation Experts. You're in the bath business. We've known each other for, I don't know how many years, many, many years, in the hallways of Dave Yoho events and Top 500 and Accelerate and all the industry events. You have one of the most incredible stories of perseverance and overcoming of anybody, I think, just about anybody I've ever known. Before we get to that, tell everybody about your business today.
I run a bath company, One Day Bath. That's what we specialize in. We also do roofing, windows, and doors, but we really specialize in one-day bathrooms. We have canvases that hit the doors for us, and that's a part of my story. We are in different malls. We help the displays in malls where we get leads. And so we have about four salesmen that's been with me for a long period of time. And we try to train them up through our canvassing program. And we have a process when we hire them. And it's a whole process of that. But basically, we do in about $5 million in door-to-door canvassing. We know how many leads we need. We know how many jobs we need. We actually go from backwards. You know, how many leads are we going to need? How many people are running? So that whole thing we have done like a science, and it's been working for me for a while.
I say it all the time, reverse engineer your business. How much money do you want to make? And then figure out, you know, how much revenue do you need? How many jobs does that mean? How many blah, blah, blah. Just like you said. So you go, you're in malls, you said, you do canvassing, all face-to-face.
Yeah, all face-to-face. We do little internet because it's pretty much out of our control. I like face-to-face. I like my guys being out with the people. And it works for us because, you know, we're out with the people. People are seeing our products. They'll come over to our booths when we're knocking on doors around the job. It's just face-to-face.
Yeah, nothing beats it. What about TV? Don't you do TV?
I do a little TV. I do a little TV, you're correct. We do that for branding. We do get a lot of leads off TV. That can be kind of put us over the budget a little bit. So we try to stay to things that we know that a face-to-face that's going to make us money.
So talk to us a little bit about canvassing. By the way, on the podcast, we've been talking a lot lately, it seems, about canvassing because people are getting back to make marketing. They're not like COVID's over. It's been over for like 2 or 3 years now. And people realized, oh, crap. You know, we got to be able to go out and make leads, not just sit around the office and wait for leads.
Yeah, I've been doing this my whole career. This is the way that I came into the business. I canvassed from the time I was 17 up until I was 30. It was my pathway out of where I was coming from. And the only job I could get was door-to-door canvassing. Basically, I met my mentor. He seen my talent and he really, really honed on me. My talents and where I can go with, you know, in the industry. But canvassing has been my bread and butter my whole career. I do some SEO marketing, very little, but you can't really control your destiny, I think, when you have other people that have more power over you. And that SEO, even though it's good, and even though it can be powerful, you got to put a lot of money in that to get those results that you want. Quite frankly, I don't have control of my business when I do those type of marketing. So even TV, people see us on TV, we get leads, but still you're counting on the TV to produce. You know, you got to run so many commercials, you got to do so many things, and it's hard to equate what are you really getting out of that. But canvassing face-to-face marketing, for me and us around here, the way I came into the business has been phenomenal. The way we recruit them, the way that we train them, it's a whole big process we got around here.
Tell us a little bit about how do you recruit canvassers?
We go through the community college. We go to churches. We go to high schools. We go to where they're at. And most of them are looking for ways to make money. And they don't know they're getting ready to get into a career. We do have some recruiters that help us in that aspect, but most of it is, you know, if you got one guy and he got friends, he's bringing his friends along with him. It's a high turnover, but we do find the ones that want to stick with us.
So we're recording this at about 1:45 on a Wednesday afternoon. How many canvassers do you have out in the field right now?
We usually keep 10 to 15 in the streets.
Wow. 10 to 15 out in the street. Wow. How do you pay them?
Pay them by performance. If they don't perform, they don't get paid. You're paying by the lead. So it makes it a little easier when, you know, they ain't got no leads. I'm sorry, a performance-based pay. So if they do 1 to 4 leads, I think they get $50. 5 to 7 leads, they get $75. Anything over 8 leads, they get $100. Some of these young guys are making anywhere from about $1,200 to $1,500 a week.
It sounds really smart where you're recruiting from. And you're recruiting young people, which makes sense. That's a job for a young person. Do they come into the office and you're training them there, or are you just putting them out in the field and training them in the field?
No, we're training them in the office for a week. We train them on a mindset, first of all, get them really prepared for what they're about to go up against. You know, so we've spent about a week on that, and then we get into the methodology of knocking on doors. But the mindset piece is very important, because they don't know what to expect. And so we tell them your mind and what we, you know, you got to overcome a lot of things. You're going to want to do it, but something's going to tell you not to do it. So basically we try to train them in that aspect for a good week of that. And then once we get to that part, then we begin to talk about the outdoor and going door to door and what to expect.
So I would imagine the first thing you're going to tell them is, people are going to slam the door in your face. They're going to tell you to go away. They're going to tell you don't come back ever again. They're just going to get rejected over and over again. And so you're working on that first.
I'm working on that first, and I'm working on the inside of them, the things that tell them that they can't do it, and the things that the rejection that's going to hit them. But then we talk about, you know, what do you want and what are you trying to accomplish? So we have a big program talking about where you at, where you want to go in life, and how are you going to accomplish that. And through the mindset first, we figured out if we get down to the internal part of them, That's where the work is at. And when we can get over that, then we have longevity.
And by the way, for everybody listening, that's not any different than any of us. Grant, me, and you. We got to get to the internal stuff first, mindset first, figure out what's going on inside, because what's going on the inside is what's going to manifest itself on the outside. So, okay, so you teach them that, you put them out in the field, there's turnover there. And then is there an opportunity then for them at some point to maybe graduate up into a salesperson?
That's why we continue to recruit. We continue to do this training, mindset training, because a lot of them don't know what it's going to take them in the beginning. So we talk about that and where they really want to go in life. And if you're doing it and you're making money, you begin to see where this can take you.
Right.
And then a lot of them gravitate towards sales.
You have a fascinating story. So from 17 until 30, you were out canvassing. What products were you making leads for?
There were many exterior products, windows, roofing, siding, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's that sort of thing. For 13 years, huh?
Canvas, yeah, but I was making good money. Back then, it was kind of different. The way that came into the business, it was kind of different than the way it is today. But back then, I was probably the tail end of the 10 men. If you know anything about 10 men, they were very flamboyant type guys. They had big egos. They had big cars. And they were the money makers. And they stood out in the city. They always stood out. You always knew a 10 man. I met one when I was younger and I started working with him. Back then, the 10 man always kept a canvasser, right? One canvasser in his car. And I was the one that was in this particular guy's car. He was one of my mentors. And back then, it was the 10 man, that's the way that they generated leads. They didn't have any other way. The company didn't give them no leads. They had canvassers on the streets. Some of these organizations have 5-10 men. And some of them had 50-10 men. They were all over the city of Pittsburgh. And you could tell because you can see the nice cars. You can see the way they dressed. You can tell they were actually selling home improvements. I got involved very young at the age 17. And basically, he asked me, did I need a job? I told him I needed a job. I didn't have nothing to do. So he put me to work. He said, you can, you know, I'll train you how to hit doors. And basically, he just put me on the streets and told me what to say. I was quite successful at it, canvassing. And back then, the salesman got 60% of the profit, 60%. And then the canvasser got 10% off the top. So I was canvassing. I was getting 10% off the top of the job. And then the company and the salesman would split 50-50.
Interesting. So okay.
I would get my money for canvassing. And I made a good living just doing that.
So when you say 10 men, what decade are we talking?
Let me explain to you so you can have a clear understanding. There are 10 men on the other side of this industry. This industry is powerful. But there are men out there that are making money by just having canvassers hit the doors. They don't go to the Davia House. They don't come to Brian K's seminars. I have 2 or 3 friends that still do it today. And if you want to interview them, you can. But they are making tons of money because they don't have any marketing costs. And they are actually just got guys knocking on doors for them. So when I got into it in the mid-80s, I was probably getting near the end of it.
All right. So you do that from 17 to 30. And then what'd you do after that?
Well, from about 30, I worked for some of these home improvement companies. I worked for Long Fence, Long Home, Home Depot, Sears. I did all that.
Still canvassing.
Oh, no. That's when I got into sales.
Sales.
Yeah. Long story short, I kind of got burned out a little bit from canvassing. And then I had one of the best mentors in the world that was training me. And then I went to work for a couple companies. And then he finally said, hey, Grant, why don't you open up your own company? And that's what I did.
How old were you?
When I opened up, I was probably like 35, 36.
Okay. And what were you selling?
I was selling windows, doors, and siding. I had a Jewish distributor that owned everything. He owned 8 locations here in Northern Virginia. He had a distributorship that he ran with one of those doors and siding. So that's where I got my training from him. He ran a sales organization. I think he had over, he didn't run it, he was a consultant in it. They had over 150 salespeople. I sold a little bit of that, but then at that time, I just wanted to start my own. So that's where I got my corporate training from. I had the street training from the street.
Right.
When he met me, I was working for a friend of his, which was another Jewish person that had a home improvement company that relocated here from Pittsburgh. And I kept seeing this guy in and out of his office. And one day he stopped me and said, "Hey, I hear a lot about you. I hear a lot of good things about you. Here's my card. Come by and see me." Somehow, some way, I stumbled in his office and he became my mentor. And if anybody knows anything about Norman Rails, he was part of the Norman Rails right-hand man. Norman was one of my mentors as well. Now that I look back on my life, I don't know where I would be without them two men in my life. And Dave Yohev. Dave Yohev's, when I first got started and I met with my mentor, first thing he introduced me to was the mindset. He said, "Grant, I want you to listen to these tapes." And I didn't know what they were. And it was Lead the Field by Earl Nightingale.
Hey, Brian Kaskavalsian here. Can I tell you something most contractors don't want to hear? The reason you're stuck isn't because you're not working hard enough. It's because you've become too important to your business. Every lead, every hiring decision, every customer issue, every problem somehow finds its way back to you. And while the company may be growing, your freedom isn't. That's exactly why we created Success Society. It's a group of growth-minded home improvement business owners who are committed to building companies that produce more profit, run with less owner dependence, and create real wealth. 3 times a year, we bring our members together for a 2.5-day intensive where we work through the challenges, bottlenecks, systems, and leadership issues holding them back. Our next intensive is July 21st through the 23rd in Denver. If you've ever wondered what it would take to get your business to the next level, make more money, and stop carrying the entire company on your shoulders, let's have a conversation. Go to theentrydoor.info and schedule a quick 15-minute call. That's theentrydoor.info. Let's see if Success Society is a fit for you. Oh, and man, that was the first one I got, too.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty powerful information in there that really opened my eyes up.
Yeah.
And that was, he was listening to that.
On cassette tapes.
Yeah, cassette tapes, yeah.
That's what I listened to those things over and over. That Lead the Field was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, man, it still is.
It still is.
So he gave me that, and he said, "I want you to meet a friend of mine." And at this time, he was already a part of the Dave Yohev organization. He was a living legend. I mean, everybody that came in the mail, the guy was uneducated, but like made millions. Like he was like the best mentor that I ever had as far as personal development.
Who was that?
His name was Mel Rosenblatt.
Okay, Mel Rosenblatt.
He's a living legend through Dave Yohev. Him and Dave were really close. And so he took me and he took me to meet Dave personally. He said, "Let's go have lunch. I want you to meet this guy." And David took interest in me. And David said to me, he said, "Grant, I don't care what methodology you use. You can use mine, you can use anybody, but you better get one because the way you're doing it, you're going to have limited success." And I took his tape, the Dave Yohev's The Science of Selling Home Improvement. I took that tape and I put it in my cassette back then, and I listened to it, and everything he told me to do, I did it, and it worked out beautifully. And I went back, and I told Mel, I said, "Man, this is wonderful." I said, I can't recall the story, but I did remember going back to him and said, "Man, them tapes are powerful." And both of them were. So that was my training ground from having them two guys. Plus a little bit of Norman Reynolds in my life, because all three of them were combined in some way. I was fortunate enough to have them.
To the listener, I'm going to point something out here that he just said. He said he put the tape in, and he did exactly what the tape told him to do. You know, if you don't have a good selling methodology in your business, There are many of them available now. Back then it was Dave and probably just Dave, but now there are others. And, you know, my friend John Inglis, who also has a great sales training program, the number one problem why those programs don't quote unquote work is because the minute somebody puts the quote unquote puts the tape in, they immediately start with all of the reasons why that won't work. And then they sabotage themselves. Instead of just saying, well, wait a minute, let me just do it this way. Let me do it exactly the way that they're telling me to do it. Let me see what the results are. And then later on, if I want to tweak it a little bit here and there and I want to test my version against their version, then you can do that, which I would imagine in all of these years, by now, you've probably got some variation of that that's got some of your flavor to it.
Not too much.
Not too much, right.
Not too much, because good. You don't want to go far from the GPS. I just did everything on that tape that he said do, and it was like, wow, this is simply amazing. And then I went back and I told Mel, I said, Mel, I did everything, and he had a big smile on his face. And I said, everything he told me to do on that tape, and I did, and it worked out for me. I got the sale. And I was like, this is great. This is great.
So you're 35 years old. You started your own business. How did that go?
It went good in the beginning from about 93 until about 2000. I was making money, but you know, I came from nothing, right? And a lot of guys in this business, and me being one, was kind of rambunctious. You get all this money, you want to do this, you want to drink, you want to hang out. And I was hanging out and I was suffering, didn't even know it. Then my marriage went down and the business kind of bottomed out because I was making money and I thought I was on top of the world. And so it's kind of painful to talk about it, but it's my truth. And then I found myself in a situation to where it was bad. And I have seen guys that have failed and just get right back up. I didn't know what was going to happen to me, but from about 90 until about 2000, 2001, somewhere around there, I was doing pretty good until I crashed because I was doing it within my own strength. I found myself in a situation where I was not focusing on my business. I was more focusing on the pain that got me to the business. I wasn't focused on the business. And I wasn't at that point in time. I was making so much money. And then I was drinking a lot. I was partying a lot. I was hanging out with unquote winners, but weren't really winners. They all pretend to be winners. And I lost my business and I ended up in a homeless shelter, so to speak.
Okay.
I had one good friend that I met in 1983 here in Washington, D.C., and he was with me the whole time, and he's still with me today. He starts real estate and home improvements, but he was with me when I crashed, and I lost my house, my cars, everything. Don't get me wrong. I have mentors around me warning me, Grant, you need to slow down. You're a businessman. What are you doing out till 2 o'clock in the morning, right? So about 2000, 2001, 2002, around there, I found myself in a homeless shelter. I was in a homeless shelter for like 2-3 years. And just bumming around. I had little money, not much. I had lost my family. And I had this friend of mine I just mentioned, actually came down to the homeless shelter and see what I was doing. And I said, I'm minding my business. What are you doing? Drinking, you know, I'm minding my business. He said, Grant, you're better than this. I said, I didn't tell you to come down here and see me. What are you doing here? He said, I'm here to help you. I said, I don't need your effing help. I'm all right. I don't got to worry about suppliers. I ain't got to worry about bills. All I got to worry about is where I want to get my next drink from. And that's a lot better than me worrying about suppliers. And long story short, he kept coming down. And one day he kept coming down. I think I was at the end of my road. And he said, Grant, this is what I'll do with you. He said, Grant, you got so much talent, man. I said, Mark, to be honest with you, I really don't want to go back to that life. I want to do something else. And at the time, I was working on my degree. I was coming out of this thing I was in. And he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. He said, okay, well, you got to do something, Grant. until you decide what you want to do, this is what I'll do with you. I didn't have a car. He said, this is what I'll do with you. He said, I will take you to Washington, D.C. I will go with you 3 times a week, and we can hit doors. And I hee-hawed about it. He said, Grant, you're good at it. I'll go with you. We can do this. And he didn't need to do it. He was already where he was at. Like, he was just reaching back to get me. And quite frankly, one day I said, okay, Mark, I'm ready. And we went to D.C., and we start hitting doors again. The first couple of doors we hit, we began to get jobs. And the thing began to, like a snowball, began to build. And now this is where I'm at.
Wow. So there was a lot in between there, I'm sure. But, you know, you're a big believer in mindset.
Yeah.
What are the things that you see? Let's just talk particularly about home improvement business owners. It's probably the same for everybody, at least from my experience, but specifically for home improvement, where people need help with the way they think. Where's their thinking kind of messed up and their beliefs messed up?
It's all internal. It's all things that you can't see. So for me, I knew it was there, and not until I was able to really face the things like, growing up poor, I don't deserve this. I'm lonely. I can't tell anybody I'm lonely. I have to do everything. Those things are internal beliefs that are 90% false. And they don't know that they're carrying those things. I didn't know I was carrying it until my friend Mark came down. And then I began to really look at myself, because everything that I have up to that point was my responsibility, right? I mean, we're all responsible for our results. Now, I have pretty good results, and I always knew about, you know, the inner working and all, but that was always intriguing to me. But when I really start working on myself and looking at these things, I was supposed to be a failure. That's the bottom line.
Yeah,
I didn't do good in school. I came from a dysfunctional family. That whole family thing right there, and being dysfunctional, it just set me up for failure. But when I really looked at it, a lot of that stuff was put on us, or was put on me, that 90% of it wasn't true. And when I realized that the stuff that I was told wasn't true, I went to my mentor, and I told him, you know, they told me, I'm not ashamed to say it, they told me I belonged in special education, or I was mentally retarded or something in school. And he says, get out of here. You can't believe what some people have told you because they got a title behind their name. So all that stuff that we're carrying with us, 99% was not true. And when I realized it wasn't true, that's when I was ready to make headway.
By the way, what you're talking about here is the hardest work you'll ever do. A home improvement company is hard to run and to make successful. You know as well as anybody. But that work is even harder. That's the hardest work you're ever going to do.
You can have success. You can. Don't get me wrong. I had success prior to this. But you have a cap to it. It's a cap right to it. You know, until
and
you
it's
start,
not sustainable.
Yeah. Until you start. You know, some guys, and I can mention names, and like Florida, like Scott Beeman, he's also successful because he had a really good, solid foundation growing up. His dad was a Rhodes Scholar. His mother was there, and they pumped all that positive stuff in him. So when he dropped down and he had to do what he had to do, it was easy for him to rebuild, right? Without any mindset, because he had it instilled in him. A lot of us guys don't have that instilled into us. We have confusion instilled in us. And you got confusion into a business that caused nothing but chaos in it. It makes it hard to see where you are responsible at.
It's a, what is it? Rags to riches. And it's really incredible. And today you're not the same guy you were back then. You're running a successful business. What do you do for fun?
I golf a little bit, and just a little bit, but that's mainly what I do.
How much time do you spend in the business?
My son he is the one that really runs the business now. I just love being around younger guys and training them and helping them get to where they want to go. And my coaching program allows them to do that as well.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Well, Grant, I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being open. Thanks for sharing your story. I hope that people listening will look at themselves and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, what are some stories that I'm telling myself that might not be true? What are some things that I believe that maybe I shouldn't be believing anymore, that aren't serving me anymore? And, what are some of the habits maybe that I've developed over the years as a result of that bad thinking and those bad belief systems? And hopefully we can, maybe help a few people get over some of those demons and, really go out and live their best life.
In this business, there's three things that you really have to believe, whether you're a canvasser, whether you're an owner, whether you're a production guy. There's three things that I found out that you really want to be successful. The first thing, you got to believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that your very core of yourself, you have to believe that in the potential that's in you. You have to believe that. And a lot of people, they say they do, but really the belief system is kind of off a little bit. So the next thing they got to believe in is the company. You know, you have to believe in the company that you're around. If you're not, you're probably at the wrong place and you're probably doomed for failure. And then the next thing that you really have to believe in are the products and services that you deliver to the community. Belief is a standard. It's not just belief. You know, the devil believes in God, so it just can't be belief. It has to be a standard of belief. And if you do those three things, you will be successful.
Love it. Thank you, Grant.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being here. To everybody listening, until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.